Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed, an effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
Hello, everyone. We have a very special guest here today with us on our podcast. We have Connecticut Senator Bob Duff with us. He is the Senate Majority Leader and also represents Darien and Norwalk. We're glad to have you here, Senator.
Thanks for joining us, Senator. This is very exciting. You know, we have a lot on the agenda for the legislature this session. So walk us through what's a priority for you.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be on this podcast with you. I'm glad you started it. And it's really great to, a way to communicate to all your members around the state of Connecticut. I think for all of us this year, there's lots of things on the agenda. It's a short session and the shortest of short sessions because of the way that the calendar works for us. But nonetheless, it's really going to make us just work even harder than we normally do to get things done for the people of the state of Connecticut. I think for us, the Senate Democratic Caucus, we have a number of bills that really are important. I think they impact teachers and our education in a very positive way. We have Senate Bill 1 and Senate Bill 2 that talk about mental health and the well-being of our students and our teachers and the educational environment in general. We're talking a lot about early childhood education and getting kids prepared and ready for life in secondary schools. We also want to make sure that we are helping kids who graduate and students when they get on to higher education. Our debt-free community college has been a real big boon to the community college system. I know it helps a lot of people, and frankly, we should be looking at education as, you know, pre-kindergarten all the way through at least an associate's degree, but probably a master's degree.
Yeah.
For all of us, at least in the Senate Democratic Caucus, supporting education, making sure that we have the proper tools for mental health and behavior health can be very important in the session.
So I understand that you did some really important work with the ECS formula back in 2017. Can you walk our listeners through what exactly that formula does and the work that you did to make important changes to that?
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate the question. And, you know, I want to also just thank both of you for the work you do. CEA and leading folks during a very difficult time, especially teachers in such a difficult time for them as well, and you all are really doing a great job. Back in 2017, we had a tied Senate and we had a narrow majority in the House, and the legislative leaders worked to craft a bipartisan budget. And in that bipartisan budget was a brand new ECS formula that was scheduled to be phased in over 10 years. And if I can just kind of go back in time a little bit further, very quickly, the genesis of that really came out of the CJEP versus REL court case. And the fact that Educational Alliance was talking about the fact that there was a very unequal formula for education in the state of Connecticut. And I agreed with that. But it's very difficult to make changes to that formula because the formula ended up being not a formula. It was really a political document. And so when CJEP versus REL case ended up getting adjudicated, and frankly, the plaintiffs lost that, the states won, but there was still that opening to make changes to it. And so I worked a lot with the School Finance Project, with Katie Roy, worked very well with other groups like Democrats for Education Reform, worked with TEA and AFT and others. We brought a lot of people around the table to talk about how we can make sure that we're not leaving our kids behind, especially in our urban areas. And so out of that formula, we came out with ways in which we can help our communities, especially like in Norwalk and Stamford, have traditionally been underfunded over the years. So we looked at how we can use less reliance on property values, how we can do more for English language learners. We can do more for kids who are in poverty, in concentrated poverty. And so we looked at all of that as a way to benefit, especially our cities that had growing school population. And what we saw before is what we're seeing now is that we have many of our districts in our suburban and rural areas are having
think, you know, for a lot of people, the education cost sharing is a mystery. It doesn't always make sense. It feels a little arbitrary. And we've seen people, advocate groups, even try and say we should get rid of that and we should go to state contracts and all sorts of different things. But I think ECS is here to stay, basically, is what I see. I think it's really hard to move our entire system in a completely different direction. So I think the work to improve it, to try and figure out how to get what we want out of it, how to get it to meet the objectives, is really, really critical. Because I think we hear from educators sometimes that, okay, where's the money, right? Like, how are we going to make things happen? We talked to Danbury President Aaron Daly a couple months ago about what does being underfunded really mean, right? Because I think that's what part of this conversation is about, is how do we make sure that those dollars get where they need to go so that we can really support kids and families, communities, and our economy? Because if our school system suffers, literally everything suffers. So I think this is really interesting to see about how we can get the dollars where they need to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with 100%. And that's, I think, the part of the formula that makes so much sense, is that this actually is a formula, not a political document. That, because it was before, it was like, okay, what could we do to get funding in certain districts to get the votes we need to pass the budget? Now we have funding that actually literally helps kids who are coming from other countries who can't speak English, kids who are, you know, need extra help because they live in circumstances where they may not be as prepared as we need them to be. So that's why this formula is so important. And while, you know, I certainly didn't get everything I asked for, it set the stage and set the foundation to make tweaks along the way so that it helps. You know, one of the things that we had to agree to was that 10-year phase-in. I would have preferred to not have a 10-year phase-in, to either have a 5-year phase-in or to automatically just implement the formula. But, you know, and when we had a bipartisan budget in order to get the Republicans to go along, that was part of the agreement that we made. Now, so we may change that this year or next year so that you have less of a phase-in. I'll also say this, that, you know, a few years ago, I introduced legislation that looked at small school districts that have fewer than 2,000 students. And those school districts cost the state of Connecticut a lot of money, millions and millions of dollars. So we look at ways in which we can actually help students put more money into education. We're spending a tremendous amount of money on very small districts. And the research says that if you have smaller than 2,000 students in your district, those kids aren't getting the educational opportunities that children do in other large districts. And so what you end up doing is you spend a lot of money on administration. You're not putting that money in the classroom. That was looked at as a quote-unquote regional bill or forced regionalization, and it didn't go anywhere. It was, there's a lot of kind of misinformation to that. But I think it's still something that we should look at, because we have these very small districts who are paying superintendents, who are sometimes part-time, well over six figures, and where these kids are not getting educational outcomes that I think that they need. So there's money in there. We just got to make sure it's put in the right place.
Well, I think you bring up a really good point, and that's something that I'm not sure that there's an easy answer to this question, but how do we make sure that those dollars that you've worked really hard to make sure are going to the right places actually get to where they go? We know sometimes districts don't always prioritize the spending in the areas that they need. So, for instance, you mentioned administration. We have a lot of heavy administration districts where some of those bodies might be better served in the classrooms as paraprofessionals or as educators with smaller class size. You know, what are your thoughts on some of the accountability measures for this funding once it's given to the districts in terms of where it's actually spent?
Well, I think you're absolutely right about that, and that we should be looking at outcomes, and we should be holding districts accountable for the money that we spend. I mean, we spend over $1 billion a year on education cost sharing, and that doesn't include some of the other pots of money where we put funding. And so if we're just writing blank checks without actually measuring some of the outcomes, or we're just saying we're giving excuses to some districts that they can continue to fail some of our kids, that's wasted money. That's a wasted opportunity. Or we're saying that, oh, just hire a bunch of administrators and not put that money into the classroom where the kids really need it for extra reading time, social workers. language learners, teachers, whatever it is. I think that it's up to the State Department of Education and others, but, you know, it may take an act of the legislature to actually more finely tune the dollars that we send and what can string attached to that. So I think those conversations are welcome and that we should be having them. I think the hardest part with getting that new formula, once you get that new formula and that base there, then you can say, okay, how do we make sure that we get kids prepared for the jobs in the 21st century? Connecticut doesn't have, our natural resources are people. We don't have oil, well, gas,
right.
We don't have all, you know, any of these other things that a lot of other states do. Our natural resources and our people. And so we've got to make sure that we invest in our people.
Absolutely. So Senator, what's on the next level for ECS? So we look at this legislative session, what's out there that is going to continue to advance that work?
Well, there's a House bill out there right now. It also speeds up the implementation of the formula. There's the chef agreement that's out there that is being debated right now. And we were able to put more money into the education funding formula this year in our budget. I would also think that, you know, also besides some of the formulas, there's also other things that are important. Something that's near to CEA's heart is air quality. And
absolutely.
Having a healthy environment for our kids in Norwalk, because we've had 40 years or so of schools that look the same as they did when I went to school here.
Right.
And that's not right. They're not updated. They're old and they're tired and they need to be updated. There's not proper school environments for kids. So we've got to be looking at that too. So I think there's a lot of work to do. It's getting the will in which to do it and funding the districts that have increasing student enrollment. We cannot continue to fund districts where they're at declining enrollment because it's just putting good money after bad.
Well, there certainly is a lot of logic to all of the things. I mean, you're speaking all of our love language of education here when you talk about indoor air quality and really modern facilities. The idea that we know that public education is a path forward for everyone. It is a way to uplift our students, our communities, our economy, everything. But it's an investment. We need, you know, educators to be excited to be about their workplace. But that means that we have to invest in them. We can't have buildings that are being condemned. We need to have spaces that are really, you know, exciting to be in, that have the resources, have good air quality. I mean, it's something that we genuinely take for granted until it's not there. And there's nothing like a pandemic to show us, you know, with glaring lights, what's not working. So it's exciting to hear us talk about education in a forward-thinking, strategic, you know, investment mindset. So,
and we so appreciate your support in that area, and especially making sure that schools are equitable and that the funding is going to the areas where it needs to be in order to ensure that all students are getting the same quality education, which brings us to another interesting topic that I know is near and dear to both your heart and mine as a Darien teacher, but the subject of open choice. I hear that you have recently written an article for the, or an op-ed for the Connecticut Post. And
yep.
I think what I'd love for our listeners to hear, not so much the issues with accepting open choice or not, because I think that has been a pretty lively discussion, but what are the real benefits to open choice and how does this help both districts who participate in that program and why is it so important to invest in it?
Right, that's a great question. And I, you know, I'm a supporter of open choice, and I think that kids learn in different environments and we should have those opportunities. And, you know, so let's look at, if you just look at the basics of why this was important for Norwalk and Darien. Norwalk is a growing school district, and we are at capacity right now. Again, I'm reminding you that we have not done real school construction in 40 years. We're doing some now, finally, but it's taken a long time to do it. So we're over capacity. Darien is not at capacity. They're under capacity and they've been losing population. Norwalk is a very diverse school district. I went to Norwalk Public Schools. I'm a substitute teacher long term in the public schools. I was joked to people at the time that I got into politics because teaching was too hard.
We have openings, by the way. Senator, if you want to get your feet wet again, we'll take you.
Thanks, I appreciate that. And Darien is very homogeneous. They're not diverse at all. You know, I look at this as a win-win. Both districts. And mm-hmm. So it would provide much needed diversity for the town of Darien. It would provide a little bit of relief for the city of Norwalk as we undergo a lot of school construction that we need to do. And I think the benefit, frankly, I've always said Norwalk will be just fine. Darien prioritized COVID choice for years. In fact, choice has been around for decades. And it's what we should be doing. We have so many schools across the state of Connecticut that are not diverse, and they're just racially segregated. I think we're the sixth most racially segregated school district, school system in the entire country. Having this pilot program to have literally 16 kindergartners go to Darien and get voted down by their Board of Education there is really a mistake. I think it's an abomination of their duties. They used a lot of excuses about why they shouldn't do it or couldn't do it. None of them hold water, and that's why I did the op-ed, because I just poked holes in all their arguments. And frankly, again, they should be looking at this as a great opportunity. And as somebody who graduated from public schools here, and my kids, one graduated, another one's on his way to graduating, I know that the most underappreciated aspect sometimes of our school district is its diversity, because it's this, you don't realize what you have, how good it is, until you actually get into the real world. And you understand that that's what the world looks like. It doesn't look like some of the other school districts that are very homogeneous.
You are spot on there. And, you know, I think one of the things that you really are emphasizing that I think is so valuable is the notion that the receiving district receives a lot more than students. They really, it allows their students to grow in ways that they didn't even know they needed to. And I think isolation is not the name of the game at this point in time. And the harder people fight to stay isolated, the more disadvantaged they're making their community. We are a global citizenry. I mean, you can't look any further than the issues in Ukraine are affecting us here in Connecticut. The reality is that we don't live isolated lives. And any pretense of that is very naive. And, you know, that we want students to grow and to understand each other and to benefit from different perspectives and to see the world in lots of different ways, so that they can go out and navigate it with some amount of finesse and maturity. But it takes time to develop that. It doesn't happen in a 20-minute conversation on a Tuesday. It's an overtime developmental experience.
You know, and I have to say, you know, I've been a Darien teacher for almost 20 years. I am very proud to be a Darien teacher. I have truly appreciated every student, every family that has come through my classroom door. And I know that there are a lot of families within the town who support this program, who are really looking to embrace a lot of different areas surrounding diversity, equity, inclusion. But I do want to touch a little bit upon the fact that our communities, Norwalk, Darien, Stamford, interchange with each other all the time, from going out to restaurants to our after-school activities. I know just my friend whose daughter's in one of the dance programs. She's a Norwalk student. Some of my Darien students take dance with her. They interact with each other. We have a magnet school in Norwalk. We have a magnet school in Stamford. Both of those schools regularly accept Darien students. And so I think that when we look at where we are and other things that are happening within our towns, this is really important. It's another step in making sure that our students and our families understand each other and our cultures and appreciate each other and really do appreciate the diversity that is that lower Fairfield County area that really has a lot of unique and dynamic opportunities, and everybody should be welcome to it.
Senator Duff, we are...
I just want to agree with that and say that I know that there are a ton of Darien families who disagree with the Board of Education vote, which is why they came out to support revote of that, and so I just urge people to continue to speak up.
Absolutely. This is a good moment for community activism, if there ever was one. And, you know, we are really advocates for people engaging, because one of the things we've seen certainly as a trend across the state is silent majorities are losing. And so if you don't decide to pipe up, you will continue to be a silent majority that has no vote. And so we really do hope that people feel inspired to step up and be heard and engage in the process, because we would like to continue to represent the values we know to be true. Like Jocelyn said, her experience in Darien speaks volumes to the quality of the people there. So let's not let this vote be the dictating factor. Let's look to really what do we want the future to look like.
And we so appreciate you coming on to our podcast.
Yes.
I have to say that as a former constituent of yours and also, you know, someone whose school district is part of your constituency, we so appreciate that work, the work you do to support our public schools and to support our communities. So thank you very much for all that you're doing. And hopefully we have some celebrations at the end of this legislative session that really make us proud to be Connecticut teachers. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Duff.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at cea.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word, because we are
stronger together.